Hi, everybody. This is Pod Vader here. Before we start the podcast, I just wanted to let you know we did experience some technical difficulties, but because this is the most important week of the preseason, week three, we wanted to get this information out to you, and we have a super special guest. Please bear with us as we try and fix the technical difficulties.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, hello, it is Pod Vader here once again with two more Superfans and a special guest on this edition of Next Fan Up. You can reach out to us on email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at NFU Podcast, and you can check out all of our previews every single week at our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/NFU podcast. I have Ken, who is our Chargers super fan, here with me today. Ken, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing all right. Getting by. Sam is our Giants super fan. Hey, Sam, what's happening?
Nothing. Everything's good here in New York.
Excellent. And saving the best for last, it is our special guest, Mr. Christopher Harris of harrisfootball.com. Chris, how are you?
I don't know about the best for last, but I'm doing really, really well. Thank you for having me. I'm super psyched to be here.
I'm super psyched to have you. Tell everybody about your new podcast.
Yeah, it's every day, every weekday. You can find it at harrisfootball.com. You can follow us on Twitter at harrisfootball. And the idea is essentially we're helping you take you right up to your draft with a show every day, analyzing a different part of your draft strategy or, different kinds of players who we like or we don't like. And then as the season goes along, waiver wire and trade advice and everything else you need for fantasy and also for daily fantasy sports, so DraftKings, that kind of thing. So hopefully people will be so inclined to check it out. I was at, like you, Jay, ESPN, maybe not quite for as long as you were. I was there 8 years and now off on my own trying this new venture.
Yes, I doubled your time. It was a fun time, and now it's a more exciting time out here in the wild, all by ourselves. All right, let's kick things off. As everybody knows, I go game by game here. We start with the Friday night games. I was actually surprised not to see any Thursday night games this week, but pleasantly surprised. And the first game for week three, the most important week of preseason football to be watching, just happens to be the New England Patriots at the Carolina Panthers. Chris, I know you are a big Patriots fan like I am. I don't know if you're as big. You might be more informed than I am. But I don't know if you're as big a Patriots fan as I am.
Yeah, I mean, big fan, been a fan my whole life. It's been easier to be a fan in the past decade than it was in all the previous decades, and I'm excited to see what they're going to be this year. Mostly excited to see how much we're going to have Brady. I don't believe it's a four-game suspension, and in this particular game against the Panthers, for the Patriots, I just like to see the offense with Brady playing a little bit more, enough of Jimmy G. I'd like to see those receivers out there. I don't think we're going to see LaFell, but hopefully Edelman plays, and like to see some clarity among the running backs. Doubt it's forthcoming, but mostly want to see Brady get to play with some of his weapons.
What do you think of the impact of Reggie Wayne now on the team?
I don't think it's a big one. I think, if anything, it sort of makes me worry about LaFell. It's Fort Knox up there for injuries, but it would seem to me that it's not a great sign that you're signing a clearly washed-up player, although professional, but last year in Andrew Luck's, system, 700-800 yards receiving and two touchdowns is not good enough. Makes me worry that LaFell might start the year on the PUP, and if that happens, I think the offense will suffer for it.
On the Panther side, they're also dealing with wide receiver injuries.
Right, yeah. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin out for the year. The thing to watch in this dress rehearsal for the Panthers is, does any receiver step up? But the suspicion has been that Devin Funchess, the rookie out of the University of Michigan, could be the Kelvin Benjamin of this year, a guy kind of lightly regarded as an athletic but very raw prospect coming out of college. Benjamin was that last year, and he really surprised. So maybe Funchess can play that role this season. There's another, you know, there's other cast of characters there, Jericho Cutchery and Corey Brown and Ted Ginn. And so, you know, I'd like to see how that's going to shake out. I think we have a good sense of the running back is Jonathan Stewart and the tight end is Greg Olsen, but those receivers, we're going to have to see how that goes. I mean, my suspicion is that you're going to see Cam Newton running more this year. Now, that's very good for his fantasy football value, but, you know, maybe not so great for his health.
I'm going to be watching the Patriots defense. I want to see how that secondary, which Malcolm Butler steps up. Basically, the one that was able to shut down some big-time wide receivers or the one that was getting beat all the time. I have a feeling the truth is somewhere in the middle. But I definitely want to see how Malcolm Butler holds up against whomever is catching balls from Cam Newton on the Panthers these days. And also, I want to see against a mobile quarterback like Cam Newton how that defensive line rotates, because I think that's going to be interesting to watch. I think that's the strength of the Patriots defense right now, and I think there's some guys like Jabal Sheard that are already showing flashes of what we can expect this season from that defensive front seven. So that is what I'm watching in this game. Ken, we're going to bring you in here and tell me what our super fans are watching here in the Detroit Lions and Jacksonville Jaguars game.
Well, unfortunately, our super fans dropped the ball this week on both sides of this game. But I think
feel shame,
all eyes are going to be
fans. Feel shame.
But I think, obviously, when we're talking about Detroit in the preseason, if we don't mention Amir Abdullah, I don't know if we're doing our jobs right, because he really looked good in that first preseason game. And then I'm interested to see what Christopher Harris feels, how he feels about Amir Abdullah.
It's been the major topic of discussion on my podcast, the Chuck Bell Amir Abdullah thing. You know, I think Abdullah's a great prospect. I don't know if I think he's a full-time back, and I don't think the Lions think that either. So, you know, probably what we're looking at in Detroit is a timeshare that will benefit the team. You know, I mean, if Joik Bell of last year, who, you know, the second half of the year, he's terrific, could team up with, you know, maybe Reggie Bush plus, a healthy version of Reggie Bush plus, you know, that's maybe what the Lions were kind of supposed to be in the backfield last season when they were a playoff team. So I am excited to see Abdullah play. You know, for fantasy purposes, he's being way, way overhyped. But, you know, for Lions purposes, this has the potential to be the kind of offense that can really, you know, take the top off of a defense.
And then if I'm being honest, the Jacksonville Jaguars never really enter into my football watching schedule, especially not in the preseason. But I am interested to see more of TJ Yeldon, and obviously everyone wants to see what Blake Bortles can do in year two. This is the third preseason game. He's going to be playing more than he has the last two preseason games. So it'll be interesting to see the offensive side of the ball for Jacksonville, because the defensive side of the ball with their head coach obviously is much better than the offensive side of the ball.
Sam, we didn't forget about you, but we have finally come. Yes, I'm glad you are. But we have finally come to the first game assigned for you, and that is the Tennessee Titans at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right. We'll start with the Titans side. I think every Titans fan and every NFL fan is watching one thing, and that's who's taking the snaps for the Titans. And reading about the Titans, people aren't happy about the way they're using Mariota. They're putting him in too safe of a situation. So it'd be nice to see in week three if they dial up some more creative plays for him and see what he can do. On the Chiefs side, I mean, the one thing that I'm looking for is, what do they do with Jeremy Maclin? Because as Chris can tell us last year, their wide receivers were fantasy players what to die. And And it would be nice to see, you know, if Sandy Reid does anything with him, if he can be the player he was in Philadelphia and what that exactly does to their passing game.
What are the Titans doing in their backfields?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we know yet. Bishop Sankey probably declared dead a little prematurely after one season, you know, behind a terrible offensive line. If we go back a year, I think what we said about Sankey before he ever played a down in the NFL was athletic freak, you know, the draftniks who judge based on the spark score. You know, they said he was off the charts. And I tell you, in the second preseason game, Sankey looked legit. He looked very good. And David Cobb came in and looked good as well. In this third preseason game, I very much think it's worth watching how they juggle the running backs, and then also, you know, whether Sankey can kind of continue that momentum against a good defense. You know, it's a pretty good defense. So I've been kind of a David Cobb player guy all summer, thinking that he would eventually assert himself. But, you know, if Sankey winds up being the player now that we thought he'd be last year, that is certainly going to muddy the waters and potentially make Sankey for fantasy a really interesting value pick, and for Titans fans, just kind of an exciting possible committee that would actually be effective, as opposed to the, you know, the Sean Green days, which were not particularly effective.
So for those of you that wanted to skip ahead, this is the point that you've made it to. Welcome to Saturday in the podcast, and the next game up on the list is Pittsburgh at Buffalo. From our Pittsburgh superfan, his name is Greg, the one thing that he really wants to see, this is the fourth game for the Steelers, stay healthy, no more injuries, please. Losing Pouncey hurts, but losing the next guy is going to hurt more. So he's going to be watching the center position. Cody Wallace should be fine, but he'd like to see it first. He's also keeping an eye on the secondary. Kevin Fogg has played well enough to make the 53-man roster, but he was an undrafted, and therefore I think he'll be on the practice squad. In essence, you're not going to see a lot of Kevin Fogg in this game. Chris, what are your thoughts here on the Steelers and the Buffalo Bills?
Well, the Steelers, I feel the same. You know, they got to stay healthy. They are now kind of in the fourth game. I'm interested in the defense. You know, I think it's a defense that's primed to really struggle this year. And, you know, a ton of turnover. They're relying on a ton of unproven players in unproven spots. So let's see against what shouldn't be a great Bills offense. You know, let's see how they perform. On the other side, I think in Buffalo, it's really all about the quarterback position. You know, I'm not going to say they've figured out the offensive line, but I think it's okay. And I think skill position-wise, they're in pretty good shape. You know, they've had some running back depth problems, but they at least have a bunch. And the defense should be really good. I think whether the Bills sink or swim, and this is not a revolutionary statement to say this, is about the quarterback. You know, if Tyrod Taylor is really going to be the guy, that's really going to change what that offense is. I mean, he's not an accurate thrower, but he's a great athlete, and he's a very dangerous runner, and the Bills will be no fun to prepare for. So the Bills have said they're going to try three quarterbacks with the first-team offense in this one. I guess we need to be watching, you know, how each one performs, and can Taylor keep that momentum going?
Well, the interesting thing there is E.J. Manuel and Tyrod Taylor would seem on paper to be the most compatible quarterbacks in terms of skill set, with obviously our former Patriot boy being the odd man out. So if Tyrod Taylor becomes the number one, you think E.J. Manuel is the number two?
I don't, but not because you're wrong, because you are right. I think the problem with E.J. Manuel is he can't play at all, apparently. The truth is, though, that they aren't, you know, as far as runners go, and what Taylor's going to do the best is run. You know, whether it's run to throw to the wings, the Russell Wilson style, or whether it's actually run to run. And E.J. Manuel is a good runner, a good athlete, but he's not that kind of quick twitch, you know, get down the field in a hurry. He's more of kind of a giant dude that people don't like to tackle. But what it comes down to with Taylor, they have found that he's accurate enough as a thrower to at least make Sammy Watkins relevant and, you know, to keep an offense moving as a thrower. At least they've found that so far. I'm a little skeptical they're going to continue to find that. Whereas with E.J. Manuel, apparently in practice, he absolutely just can't hit a receiver. So I think in theory you're right. Two athletes would be awesome to be one and two. You'd have a really coherent system. I just think they've found that Manuel can't be that guy.
So to me, I think if I'm the head coach, which I'm not and probably never will be, I'm probably putting my money more on Castle winning the job. I know Tyrod Taylor seems to be an exciting option, but I think they're going to be better off in the long run going with a guy who is a capable quarterback. I mean, he is with, at the very least. I guess we've got to watch and find out. That's what Saturday is going to be all about there. Sam, you're up next here with the Atlanta Falcons at the Miami Dolphins.
Okay. Actually, these are both teams that I really like to make the playoffs coming this year. I think they're both in make or break seasons, both for their head coach. I mean, not for the Falcons head coach, but for the Dolphins head coach. On the Falcons side, I'm looking for that offense, that second wide receiver to come out that Roddy's not playing, and just to see what Julio Jones can do in his contract year. I want to see some spark from him. On the Dolphins side, it's not the best team to see this against, but they totally revamped their run defense this year with bringing in Sue. So I'm kind of curious to see how that line plays because it has the potential to be one of the best in the league. And I guess to ask Chris this, I'm a huge fan of Julio Jones. I think he's the number one wide receiver in fantasy this year. I just want to get your opinion on that and the top of the wide receiver rankings in fantasy.
I absolutely understand. I mean, if you're lining up super freak athletes, I think you have Calvin Johnson 1, Julio Jones 2, you know, and maybe that's going to switch because Calvin, you know, gets over 30. My issue with both of those two actually has just been health. You're not going to blame, I'm not calling anybody soft. You're not going to blame anybody for getting hurt, but Julio has had a hard time staying healthy the past couple of years and has, in fact, not missed games, but been limited when he has played. He was awesome last year. I mean, that Green Bay game where he almost single-handedly, you know, beat Green Bay on the road, it's just like, what more can one player do? Unbelievable. But I would say, you know, probably I rank him, I think, I'm not right in front of my ranks, maybe 4, something like that. You're not going to go wrong with him. But I do have Antonio Brown and Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas ahead of him, you know, for what it's worth. I think we're kind of splitting hairs.
Oh, okay. Well, Demaryius? I'm out on Demaryius this year, but that's a conversation for a different time.
Well, I bet it's a conversation for when we get to the Broncos game.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be soon then.
By the way, you had mentioned, playoff darlings here in Atlanta and Miami. Atlanta are my boyfriends this year, Chris. I really like Atlanta's chances as a comeback team. And as I've joked before, when the first team in your division doesn't have a winning record, it's not that difficult to be a comeback team.
Right. I think we've had this conversation on my podcast. I have just real questions about that defense. I know Dan Quinn being there and bringing the defensive pedigree, there's some trust there, but I'm not sure the personnel is there. I'm worried we're going to see some, 35, 40-point let-up games.
Yeah, it might be. I tend to like some of the personnel there in terms of pass rushing. And I will watch this game for sure because I want to see exactly how that defense gels. It does. My love of Atlanta really does hinge on their defense improving, obviously.
Yeah.
Ken, Cleveland is at Tampa Bay.
All righty. So Rob did post his preview on the Facebook page. And he is wondering about whether Duke Johnson is going to be able to suit up with the first team this week. And then he's also looking at Josh McCown to see if he can rebound from his poor game against the Bills. The Bills had a lot of crazy blitz packages, and McCown did not handle those very well. And then he's also looking to see on the defensive side of the ball, Danny Shelton and Paul Kruger get after Jameis Winston. So in terms of the Bucs, obviously Jameis Winston is going to be the star of the show for that preseason game. But I'm wondering if Chris Harris thinks that Doug Martin is making another appearance in fantasy relevance this year.
Yeah, if I was going to say the one thing that I was interested in for just Buccaneer fans for this one, it would be Doug Martin. And, Doug Martin in combination with an offensive line that is much maligned and lost its starting right tackle and has real question marks, but looked fantastic in week two. And you never know exactly what you're getting, but they looked great, and Martin looked great, like you were implying. And if we're back to the days when Martin's legs are healthy and that offensive line is, you know, league average or better, then, yeah, I think we could be looking at a fantasy sleeper, and maybe more importantly for Bucks fans, you know, a way to keep some of the pressure off of Jameis Winston. I think my biggest storyline in this game, though, has to be Josh McCown returning to Tampa. Huge revenge game. Huge revenge game for Josh McCown.
By the way, I know we seem to have glossed over this with Pittsburgh, but they ended up signing Michael Vick earlier this week. I mean, I don't think Ben Roethlisberger needs to worry about his starting position. But here's another thought for you, Chris, and I'm curious to see what you're thinking here. We've seen a lot in the preseason, and we know that a lot of this has to do with, because it's preseason, teams going for the 2 points instead of kicking the 33-yard extra point. My question is, are guys like Michael Vick and Tim Tebow now going to become a little bit more valuable in terms of going for that 2 point conversion rather than a kicker possibly missing a long extra point?
Well, it's a good question, because I don't think we have a fair sample size to make a judgment yet. Like you said, too many variables here. Like, are coaches really serious when they're going for two here, or are they simply, you know, it's preseason, it doesn't count, I'm going to try it out and just see what this looks like. So I don't think we know that yet. And probably different coaches are going to have different philosophies there, and probably we're not going to be able to predict it until we get into the season. But I think the larger point is that in terms of NFL roster spots, sure, absolutely. I think the only reason the Eagles will consider not cutting Tim Tebow is because they're imagining him as part of specialty packages like 2-point conversions. And I think Mike Vick is probably in Pittsburgh because of Bruce Gretkowski's injury, so he's there as insurance policy for Big Ben. But by the same token, if you're needing to go for two, why wouldn't you have Vick in there instead of Roethlisberger on occasion to mix it up? You know, for fantasy purposes, it's not enough to make these guys relevant at all. But I know what you're asking about is just, does it make these guys more rosterable by NFL teams? And I think I would have to agree with you and say the answer is probably yeah.
Our next game up is the Minnesota Vikings at the Dallas Cowboys. I've been on record saying I'm not a believer in Teddy Bridgewater. I don't believe in the Minnesota Vikings. But Chris Harris, I know you have a slightly different opinion.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I think they're Super Bowl contenders, but I really do believe in their playoff contention. It's interesting. The Atlanta defense that we were just talking about parallels really interestingly with the Vikings defense, because, you know, Mike Zimmer has already had his first go-round with that defense and has already gotten rid of some of the players that he inherited and has already, you know, gotten over the hill of some of the struggles that you go through when you're a defensive specialist and you come to a new team. Things that Dan Quinn probably is going to get to do, you know, in 2016 and beyond, but you know, I think he's going to have to spend a year worrying about. I love that Vikings defense. You know, I just think you've got a really strong secondary. They've built it from both edges in. You know, you have questions at linebacker, but the defensive line, the pass rush is terrific. Everson Griffin finally showed what he can be. And, you know, I believe that defense is going to wreak a lot of havoc this year. I think Teddy Bridgewater, I think, is a good player who probably won't be unleashed, you know, with Adrian Peterson back. He'll probably be, you know, leading a conservative passing attack again. But I think it's a kind of a rock-solid Vikings team. I think you're going to see 9-7. I think you're going to see 10-6. You know, I know there's some people's sleeper pick for the Super Bowl. I think that's way aggressive. But we should have a little side bet about who winds up with more wins between the Falcons and the Vikings.
Ooh, I'm down with that. I'm down with that. What are we going to put up here?
you're the king of the side bets. I defer to your judgment.
Maybe we'll take this off air, or maybe you could send us your recommendations to nextfanup@gmail.com.
That's what we need. Yeah.
Yes, and then Chris and I will agree on one, and we'll broadcast it, and we'll have a little Twitter battle going back and forth all season.
I'm in, and when the Vikings are 0-11, I'll have to block you.
That would be great. For the Cowboys, our super fan writes that after the news of Orlando Scandrick's season-ending torn ACL, the goal of this in any other preseason game is explicitly clear, just survive. Unfortunately for him, the first teamers are going to play a lot more than usual, so survival and finger crossing will be a lot longer than usual in any other preseason game. He also says it's nice. It will be nice to see something out of the running game and at least one of our triumvirate of backs, but that can only happen with the participation of most of our starting O-line. For as dominant a unit as that is, depth has all of a sudden become a concern. And I, too, am a little concerned about the Dallas running backs because I drafted Joseph Randall in the Blog Talk Radio first ever fantasy football league, and I need Joseph Randall to step up here, Christopher Harris.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that any one guy is going to step up. I still think Darren McFadden's going to hang around and get work, and Lance Dunbar's going to hang around and get work. If Gus Johnson makes the team, he has a shoulder injury. He was definitely going to make the team before he got hurt. You know, I think he's a very, very deep sleeper. But I think I love what the insider just said and what you just said about the offensive line, because I think it's being taken as this article of faith that the offensive line will just automatically be as awesome as it was last year. And already we're seeing injuries. And these things just don't tend to recur from year to year. It's like you catch lightning in a bottle and then, you know, maybe never it's quite the same. They had no injuries on that offensive line last year. And, you know, they already have some. And, you know, yeah, they have Lyle Collins as an extra depth guy. But if I'm a Cowboy fan, I think my biggest concern is not even at running back. I think it's more, can that offensive line, which was the anchor of the entire team last year, really do it back-to-back years? Because that's really hard to do.
I'm pretty bummed that we're not going to see that offensive line healthy this year, because as a Chargers fan, I felt that we've had some pretty good running backs in San Diego. We've never had the offensive line, and as a result, our running game has stunk. And so I was interested to see this year to have a great offensive line and a handful of running backs that we had no idea about to see what they could do. And I'm bummed that these injury bugs aren't going to let that happen, because at the end of the day, we're just going to be like, well, the offensive line was injured, so it's impossible to tell.
Well, in truth, we don't know for sure. Nobody's out for the season. You know what I mean? It's a bunch of nicks and bruises. And when the curtain drops week one, I have a feeling we are going to see most of them. But I think your point is well taken, which is, what are the odds? What are the odds that all five or six guys stay basically healthy all year again? And the odds are, I think, you know, lower at least than folks are acknowledging.
Sam, I just realized I stole one of your games away from you. But fortunately, I will not steal this game. Yeah, I will stay well out of this next one. The Battle of New York, the Jets at the Giants. Feel free, go ahead without me.
Where to start? Well, as a Giants super fan, the one thing I'm looking for is Odell Beckham to teach Darrell Revis a couple of lessons this weekend. You know, he's our Lord and Savior. So it'll be nice to see him get some receptions this week. It'll be nice to see him against Darrell Revis, you know, against Todd Bowles, a good defensive coach who might throw some schemes at him that he hasn't seen yet. And it'll be nice to see him actually. He hasn't had a catch, I don't think, this preseason. So it'll be nice to see him deliver. But more of a fan and more importantly to our season, I need to see how those lines are playing on Giants. Our offensive line, best-case scenario, will be okay. Worst-case scenario is a dumpster fire. So, you know, it'll be nice to see against a couple of good pass rushers on the Jets. I'm not sure Muhammad Wilkerson is playing, but at least against Leonard Williams, how they hold up. On their defensive line, usually an explosive bunch, but now haven't been able to, you know, lost some players, don't really have as much skill there. We'll see what Steve Spagnuolo can do, and it'll be interesting to see. As a Jets fan, my good friend, our super fan, Andrew, wrote that he wants to see how Leonard Williams plays, of course, because Sheldon Richardson is going to be out 4 games and Muhammad Wilkerson is nursing an injury, how he can handle that line. In addition to that, I think you want to see something from your quarterback play, you know, the healthy ones at least, what Ryan Fitzpatrick could do, what he can do with Brandon Marshall, who else can step up in that offense. And really, the Jets, I think, are going to be a great defense. They're just going to need something from that offense to even dream about making the playoffs.
Chris, on the fantasy side, what are we watching for in the Battle of New York?
Let's see. I mean, you know, maybe more of a hint of what the Giants running back rotation is going to look like. Although, again, you know, you can't always trust what you see. It is a dress rehearsal, so it's the closest thing we're going to get as to research to see what happens with Rashad Jennings and Andre Williams and Shane Vereen. And, yeah, I think with the Jets, it's all about the quarterback. And a pretty parallel, you know, interesting parallel with the Bills, because it looks like a fairly competent team, except for the signal caller. And, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, probably better for the offensive skill positions for their numbers. But, you know, you never know exactly which Fitzpatrick you're going to get because, you know, in the course of any given game, he can be a 400-yard passer or he can be a 4-interception passer. And it seems independent of who they're playing. He just sort of, he's a gunslinger. He takes a million chances and a lot of times he gets bit.
Hey, Chris, in a standard round draft, where do you see people taking Odell Beckham? Where would you take him?
Yeah, I'm kind of impressed at the restraint that folks have had about Beckham. You know, it started this summer where, you know, even this spring where people were saying, no doubt he's the number one wide receiver, right? And that has really calmed down. I think people have you know, realized there's an awful lot of good proven receivers in the NFL. So, you know, I haven't seen him going in the first round, and I think he's an okay pick in the second round. I think it's just fine. It's not necessarily where I would want to take him because I feel like it's the absolute best case scenario, you know, the peak of his potential value. So I might not wind up with him on a bunch of teams. But listen, I have him as a top 10 wide receiver for sure. If he's there in the third round for me, I would absolutely consider taking him. The tape on Beckham doesn't lie. This wasn't a fluke. It's not always going to be as smooth sailing as it was last year, but he's legitimately one of the quickest players in the NFL. Awesome.
Ken, the next game up is the Bears visiting the Bengals. What do our super fans have to say on this one?
Well, I highly encourage Bears fans to go on Facebook and check out the preview because Chicago Tom is very thorough with his previews for preseason games. He is looking for people to step up. You know, if you've heard Chicago Tom talk before, he's not very excited about his team being very good this season. And so watching these preseason games, he's hoping that someone breaks out of somewhere. He mentions the wide receiver, Marquise Wilson, is going to get a long look at wide receiver because of the injuries that they have. And in terms of the Bengals,
English Simon was not as thorough as Chicago Tom, I can tell you that right now.
Yes.
English Simon sort of mailed it in this week.
Yeah, English Simon was very brief with the Bengals. He's looking for urgency with his team. He's looking towards the defensive line for the rotation. And then he wants to see the first-team offense perform well with Andy Dalton under center.
Yeah, he's interested to see how they do against Vic Fangio. And, yes, I mispronounced his name on purpose, Chris. Both of our super fans for the Bengals and the Bears seem to be a little bit pessimistic. What are some things that should give them some hope here, Chris?
I think Cincinnati's a good team. You know, they haven't changed at all. It seems like it's the corners are different. You know, they're getting Leon Hall back and they're relying on Drake Kirkpatrick in a bigger role, but it's still a good defense. It's still a great offensive line. It's still some amazing skill position players. It comes down to Andy Dalton. You know, Andy Dalton's been the constraining factor. The reason the Bengals can't win a playoff game, everybody in Cincy knows it. It's Andy Dalton. I've been hammering the guy for a long time. It's not like I don't like him personally, but I just don't think he's a good quarterback. But I don't know that you're going to watch a third preseason game and decide he's a good quarterback. I think he is what he is. I think there's reason for pessimism on the Bears, but I think what you want to watch is, okay, you know, John Fox, smart guy, Adam Gase, smart guy, going to come in and try to do something with what they have. What they have is Matt Forte, you know, and Like, let's try to take some pressure off of Jay Cutler. We're going to run the ball more with Matt Forte and see if our offensive line can do what it did 2 years ago. Jermon Bushra, the left tackle, injured and, you know, may miss regular season time. So can they patchwork that together? I'd want to see, you know, to what degree we're Forte focused here, and I'd want to see, you know, what that offensive line looks like.
Next game up is the Washington Redskins at the Baltimore Ravens. Our Washington super fan, once again, asleep at the wheel. But I'm going to start with the quarterback position there in Washington because, well, usually start at the quarterback position. But in this case, RG3 isn't looking all that hot, Chris. And is it going to be Colt McCoy or is it going to be the other guy that's going to step up and take over that role?
So it's either Kirk Cousins. Yeah, Kirk Cousins or Colt McCoy. I think we're going to see Kirk Cousins with a little bit of a lead on Colt McCoy heading into this third week, but I think both guys are going to be given the opportunity because we're not going to see RG3. I don't think we are after the concussion. And so all we want to see out of either one of those guys, Cousins or McCoy, well, different things. I mean, Cousins, his problem is turnovers. His problem is not being a great reader of the field and, you know, making a bunch of mistakes. He has a lot more physical ability than Colt McCoy does. What McCoy does well is he's less likely to make mistakes. He is much less of an athlete and, you know, doesn't have as big of an arm, but can kind of be more of a caretaker. It seems to me it would be better for Washington if Cousins could take that job and prove that he's not going to be the guy he was last year and make a bunch of mistakes. But I think Jay Gruden won't hesitate to say, all right, that's enough, Cousins. You know, if he turns the ball over a few times in his series on Saturday, I think Colt McCoy will be the number two, and that'll be that. And, you know, you'll have a caretaker behind RG3.
Of course, more news in Washington. Junior Gallette, he blew out his Achilles. Washington now will be looking, apparently, according to this report from ESPN, at second-year linebacker Trent Murphy as the top option to replace him. You never like to see injuries. You certainly don't like to see injuries to top draft picks. But we'll see what happens there. In Baltimore, superfan Rex is watching rookie running back Buck Allen. With Taliaferro's knee injury, Allen is now the main backup and change of pace to starter Justin Forsett. He needs to step up and run with more authority, catch the ball better than he's shown in the first two games. He'll be watching for a shuffle at the O-line, left tackle Eugene Monroe having an issue with his elbow. So at least Rex would like to see him in some street clothes for this game. He'd also like to see the returners do something. So far, they haven't done much. And really, what he really wants to see out of the Ravens is for them to play with a little bit more energy. I ended up going old man in this fantasy league here on Blog Talk Radio. By the way, if you want to listen to that draft, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup or check out our iTunes feed. It was a couple episodes ago. I ended up going old man in this league, and I've got Steve Smith on my team, Christopher Harris. It is PPR. I'm actually probably more worried about Steve Smith because it's PPR than not. But what should we be watching for fantasy-wise in this one?
I agree that, what does Buck Allen look like? You know, he has a chance to distance himself from Lorenzo Taliaferro while Taliaferro is dealing with a sprained MCL. It seems like Taliaferro will probably miss regular season games. And if Allen can establish himself as a clear number two, that'll end Taliaferro's sleeperhood. He's been one of my favorite sleepers. And it comes down to not trusting Justin Forsett's breakout. His tape was great. He was legitimately great last year. He was also a 7-year veteran who was 29, who had never done anything close to this before. And granted, he was playing behind a very good offensive line, but he's 5'8", 190 pounds. I would be very interested fantasy-wise in whoever backs up Justin Forsett. Not to start the year, but my feeling is that at some point we're going to be looking at, you know, just too many hits if Forsett is a traditional starting back. He's a little dude. So, yeah, first and foremost, you know, I'd love to see Breshad Perriman play, but that's not going to happen. Max Williams isn't going to be a big focus on that offense. So, you know, let's watch the Marlon Browns of the world and see if, you know, they're anything at receiver, but mostly I want to see Buck Allen.
All right, Ken, your team, the San Diego Chargers, hosting the Super Bowl losers, Seattle Seahawks. What do you got for us in this one?
Well, the preseason as a Chargers fan is not very fun because our head coach, Mike McCoy, is probably one of the most conservative head coaches in the NFL. So if anyone's hurt, dinged up, anything, they're not playing, which was the case for a lot of the team last week. We didn't see Melvin Gordon. We didn't see Phillip Rivers. And I think we are going to see both of those guys this week. In terms of the preseason so far, the run game has looked pretty terrible, especially on the offensive line. They just don't look like they're gelling together to make solid holes for the running back. And as a result, when Melvin Gordon did play in week one, he only had, I believe, 7 carries. He didn't look very good. He wasn't hitting the hole. He was hesitating. I'll be interested to see that tonight. In terms of the defense has played better than I expected. We saw Melvin Ingram look really, really good last week against the Cardinals. And Kyle Emmanuel and Jerry Ataucho also looked pretty good last week, which gives me hope because the Chargers haven't had a pass rush in a very, very long time. So I'll be interested to see Rivers get into rhythm a little bit, hopefully. Keenan Allen has looked good. But, yeah, that's what I'm looking for the Chargers tonight or this weekend.
Chris, what can we expect from the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson's group?
Yeah, when it comes to Seattle, listen, they're great. There's a great team, and they probably don't have that much to prove. I'm interested in Jimmy Graham, maybe to take away some of the panic that people feel where, you know, he's moved going from a pass offense to a run offense. I was, you know, in a cameo, I thought I was pretty impressed with Graham in the second week of the preseason. The offensive line is somewhat of a concern. I mean, you trade Max Unger for Graham. You have questions in the interior of that line, and I have felt like they've looked very good through 2 weeks, but, you know, the Charger defense is going to be a little bit more loaded for bear for the first half. I mean, this is the dress rehearsal, so I want to see if they continue to be able to open holes for, you know, those running backs who aren't Marshawn Lynch. Mostly, though, like I said, real good team, probably not tons to prove. I think they know basically what they have.
I was just wondering what you were thinking about Keenan Allen this year, because people have been out of Chargers camp talking a lot about how he's looked a lot better this year. You know, he had kind of a disappointing sophomore season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I love what you said about the offensive line. I think everything starts there. On paper, I think I think you'd agree, it probably should be a pretty good line. Certainly, you know, better than average line, but I agree absolutely with your observation that it maybe hasn't gelled quite yet. And I think that maybe that influences everything. That's my roundabout way to get to Phillip Rivers and to get to the running backs and to get to Keenan Allen. I think a lot of what ailed the Charger offense last year was offensive line related. I think it's going to be a lot better this year. And, you know, Allen looked hurt to me last year. He just didn't have that same route running. He's never going to be somebody who's going to separate from you. But as a route runner, when he came in as a rookie, he was phenomenal. He was so hard to cover because he was so precise. And I think he was hurt because he just wasn't precise like that. And it feels to me like that doesn't go away even if you're a little bit out of shape. So I'm hopeful. You know, I think he's a borderline top 20 fantasy receiver, Keenan Allen, and I think, you know, there's some value there. The ceiling probably isn't as high as it is for some other guys because they're going to spread it around to a bunch of players. But he was a favorite of mine as a rookie, and I'm hopeful he bounces back.
Very cool. That's what I like to hear.
Next up is the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers. Mark, who is our Eagles super fan and our co-host, well, our main host, I should say, on our Sunday recap shows, writes in with his Eagles preview. Last year, we had a few crushing defeats. Seattle, the second game against Dallas, but the worst was getting totally dismantled by the Packers in Green Bay. Rodgers tore up the secondary like tissue paper. Our offense had no chance to keep up. This being our third preseason game is perfect. It's a true litmus test of where the team is now. Bummed that Nelson got hurt before we got the chance to cover him and that Rodgers may not play very long, but it is still a great matchup for our team. Obviously, he's going to be watching Sam Bradford, still praying on Sam Bradford's knees. And Mark, Mark all week long has been going off on the Terrell Suggs hit, still claiming that Terrell Suggs' hit was dirty. You know, Chris, what are your feelings on the Terrell Suggs hit? To me, not having a player in the game, despite the long history of Terrell Suggs and the New England Patriots, it looked like a late hit to me. But, you know, that's just me.
I think you know what you're getting when you get T-Sizzle. That's all I can say. I mean, I think you know what kind of player he is. He's dirty, but he's great. You know, and so when you have a guy who's a borderline Hall of Famer, but he plays after the at the end of the whistle, you know, and beyond, he is a dirty player. And I think I agree it was a late hit, but I feel like you know what you're getting. I feel like maybe the best thing to do is just not talk about it if you're Sam Bradford, you know, and if you're the Eagles. I think it's just better to, you know, understand what he is and understand if you ever face him again, that's what you're dealing with.
You just kind of have to move on. Move on. For the Packers, we'll be watching Rodgers' playing time lead the Jordy Nelson aftermath. Davante Adams can be 80% of what Jordy is, but we'll see if he can keep the drop off from what Jordy Nelson is to what Davante Adams actually is. And he's watching the not so special teams right now, especially the punt and the return units. They've been leaving a little less to be desired. Chris, what are your thoughts here on the Packers wide receiver position and how things should be falling out with Jordy Nelson no longer being able to play this season?
You nailed it. Davante Adams is the key player there. He gets every crack in the world at being the primary outside weapon for Aaron Rodgers, and let's see if he can do it. I'm not sure this game we're going to see much of Rodgers, though. You implied it. Like, they're down some offensive linemen who are banged up, and there's been talk that they, you know, Rodgers won't play the traditional a lot of snaps just to make sure he stays healthy. You know, I think it's really worth interest. I'm interested in the number three wide receiver battle between Ty Montgomery, a rookie out of Stanford, and Jeff Janis, who is a second-year player. You know, Janis profiles a little bit more as a traditional outside receiver, very fast, a bit bigger, but he's been very inconsistent. He got some run last year during regular season games, but, you know, made a couple plays and made a couple mistakes, and we never saw him again. Montgomery, more of a jack-of-all-trades, kind of a big Randall Cobb, but a really great athlete. So whoever wins that battle, and that could get decided in this third game, no matter who the quarterback is, that's really worth keeping an eye on, because that's they run a lot of three wide. I mean, I think 70% of the time. So whoever wins that battle has a chance to be a very important part of the Packer offense.
Indianapolis is at St. Louis. Ken, what do we got in this one?
So the Colts superfan wrote in and said the Colts offensive line continues to be a concern. The offensive tackles were beaten badly in pass protection by the Bears. Dwayne Allen actually had to be called in to pass block as a sixth lineman to ease the learning curve for one of their players. And hopefully that's not going to happen this Saturday. The Rams defense will likely dominate them, so I'm looking to see offensive coordinator Pep Hamilton keep them guessing. This dress rehearsal will be a good look at how weeks one and two will play out against defensive teams. Rookie running back Josh Robinson has been very decisive during the preseason, and he's wondering if he could maybe see some first-team reps this week. In terms of the Rams, it's all about the Rams' offense. After an awful showing by the first team last week in Tennessee, there must be an improvement if there's any hope for the Rams this season. Foles needs to make better decisions and show better composure under pressure and push the ball down the field. He's really looking forward to seeing how Brian Quick's first game action in almost a year coming back from a brutal shoulder injury will look, and he wants to see that because the Rams receiving court hasn't been explosive for Foles. So the thing I'm looking for the Rams is how that offensive line play looks this week, because they have had an offensive line deficiency for years. And I their first round pick last year didn't seem to do much in terms of improving that.
Chris, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that offensive line, it's been the problem. I got to say, though, Nick Foles made the Titans' defense last week look like the 86 Bears. You know, he played really badly. It's not going to – if he's going to play like that, I mean, you know, yeah, he had some pressure. I think that's well said. But he made some awful decisions. And that was why I was always skeptical of him in Philly. That's why the Eagles wound up trading him. It's not like he doesn't have physical tools. I just don't think he makes good decisions or has great throwing accuracy. So all in all, you know, I think all you're looking for is to not make the other team look like they have the best defense in the NFL, which is the Titans do not. That is not that good of a Tennessee defense. So I would want to see Nick Foles, you know, be a lot better.
Is Todd Gurley going to be relevant this year, or is that offensive line too bad to make him a name in fantasy to pay attention to?
I think he'll be somebody to pay attention to. I can't say it'll be right away because I've been skeptical all along about a torn ACL for week one. I think there'll come a point during the year where he starts to feel better and starts to, you know, the scales start to tip in his direction. He probably won't be himself until next season, but he's going to be worth watching because I think he's going to be a special one eventually.
Our final game on Saturday is the San Francisco 49ers at the Denver Broncos. There's a lot to get to here. Let's start in San Francisco. Ahmad Brooks, Ray McDonald, they've been indicted in a sexual assault case. The 49ers have sent Ahmad Brooks home from Denver. Obviously, things have just gone from bad to worse to even more worse for the 49ers this season, correct? I mean, to me, this seems to be the making of a very bad team this year.
Yeah, I mean, I remember sitting, you know, I left ESPN late in the summer, so during the spring I was still there, and I remember sitting in the room as we were trying to talk about all these skill players and figure out where to rank them and stuff like that, and I made the statement that I thought the 49ers could go 2-14, and everyone, like, jumped down my throat and said, what are you talking about? That's crazy. There's too much talent there for that, and it feels like the world is, you know, I'm not always right, and I might not be right this time, but it feels like the world came around to that viewpoint eventually when they started honing in on what exactly has happened to this defense and the offensive line. It's not to say the young players they have can't develop into decent starters. It's just we don't know. It's certainly possible, you know, Eli Harold, you know, is a third rounder this year. He could turn into a really good starter, and it could happen right away. We've seen that happen in San Francisco. The point being, there are so many holes to fill on the defense, on the offensive line, that we certainly have a suspicion they're not going to be good unless they hit it out of the park on all their young players.
We'll keep an eye on San Francisco for sure. For Denver, our superfan writes in, after a home week two in preseason, this is the week to bring it all together. First and foremost, we don't want to see any injury. This has been the common theme this week, no injury. It's been the common theme, obviously, throughout the entire preseason. But this week, our superfans seem to be really, really sticking to that point. His number one is, although not playing, the signing of Evan Mathis is the big news of the week in Denver. He should be sliding into left guard for week one. But interesting that he notes in point number four here of his preview that the offensive line has been surprisingly great this preseason. So the question is, did the Broncos even really need to sign Evan Mathis, Chris Harris?
Yeah. I mean, I think they did because you know, Max Garcia was probably not going to hold up. You know, I don't think defenses are really scheming to take advantage of weak links in week one and week two of the preseason. And, you know, Max Garcia may wind up being a good player, but I don't think he was ready to have that spotlight shown on him where the right defensive end, you know, stunts to the guard and boom, you're one-on-one with, you know, name your pick. Take your pick of awesome defensive pass rushers. So it's good for the Broncos. It is. They needed help, and they're, you know, maybe not fixed. I think there are still real questions at tackle. But when you have the shift, and, you know, if they're going to remain a throwing team, which they are mostly, they're going to run a lot, but, you know, they're going to at base still be a Peyton Manning kind of team. He gets rid of the ball so fast, it covers up for so many offensive line deficiencies.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring up Peyton Manning because he also added here about Peyton. He's had the zip this preseason, but he's consistently missed his targets on throws greater than 15 yards. Emmanuel Sanders has been quietly absent from any action this preseason, and he's hoping that Cody Latimer can use this time to shine. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, Sanders been out with a hamstring. He's, I think, you know, missed 3 weeks, basically. I don't think anybody thinks he's not going to be there week one, but I agree. I mean, Cody Latimer is a really interesting fantasy sleeper. He's the number three wide receiver there, and there doesn't seem to be much question about it. The Broncos are probably going to go two tight end a lot. That's Gary Kubiak's hallmark. So maybe, you know, you're not going to see Latimer on in base formations, but he's going to be out there a bunch. So I agree. It would be, if there's no Sanders in this game, let's see what Latimer looks like as the number two.
So we're now moving on to Sunday, and Sam, once again, we didn't forget about you. You just have these long pauses before your assigned game, and you have the Texans at the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be honest, the Texans are my team this year just because every year it seems every team goes on Hard Knocks has a way to get into my heart. But I think any Texans fan wants to just see Brian Hoyer play well this week. That defense is good. You know who J.J. Watt's going to be. Their cornerbacks are looking good. The rest of the team looks like it just they're all looking at the quarterback, hoping that he can do something, because if he does, it'll be a good team. On the flip side, the Saints, also looking towards the offense. They lost Jimmy Graham, and you know Nick Tune is hurt now. So it's kind of interesting to see what weapons they'll have and what they'll be able to do. But Drew Brees is another year older, another year removed from his prime, to see if he can, you know, make up for the lack of talent that they have seemingly on offense.
By the way, we finally do have a Texan superfan. His name is Vincent. He adds on the defensive side for the Texans. He can't wait to see the Texans' top two picks from this year's draft tested against Drew Brees and the high-powered Saints offense. Kevin Johnson has looked fantastic so far this preseason, only allowing 3 catches on 8 targets for 18 yards in the first 2 games. But, Chris, is it fair to call the Saints a high-powered offense anymore?
It's a good question. You know, they're rid of Jimmy Graham. They're rid of Kenny Stills. It's legit when Brandon Cooks is, you know, a really exciting prospect, but not proven by any stretch of the mean. If he's really going to be the number one weapon, I think that's a good question. It's still Drew Brees. He's really good. You know, at the very least, it's Sean Payton's offense. There's still going to be plenty of volume there, even if they're a little run heavier. By the same token, that run heaviness may take some of a hit if C.J. Spiller can't stay healthy. He had knee surgery a couple weeks ago, is expected back for week one, but won't play on Sunday. You know, I don't think we're going to learn too much about the Saints in this game offensively. Defensively, it's interesting. I mean, it's Brian Hoyer, so we're not going to go crazy. But the Saints have a long way to go on defense. It's one of the worst defensive units in the league last year, but a lot of that personnel has turned over. I'll be really interested to see just in general, is there a pass rush, and are Texans receivers just running free the way it's happened a few times in the first 2 games for the Saints?
What about the Texans running back situation? How do you see things shaping up there?
Yeah, no, Arian Foster, obviously, he's not going to be ready to start the year. There's big questions about, is he available at the beginning of October, or is it much longer than that? It seems like by the usage so far, Alfred Blue has been the guy. I'm somewhat skeptical of Blue as a prospect, as a player. He's certainly big, and he can handle a big workload, but I'm going to be watching that game to see if somebody like Chris Polk or someone like Jonathan Grimes or even Kenny Hilliard can make any sort of headway. My assumption has been it's so far that it's been Blue, but I would love to see someone else get a crack.
And the final game of the NFL Week 3 preseason is Arizona at Oakland. Now, Chris, you and I have both had the pleasure of working with Drew Brooks, who's supposed to be our Arizona Cardinals superfan. However, he has once again failed on his superfan duty. For shame, Drew Brooks, for shame. What are you looking for here in the Arizona Cardinals?
I'm almost positive Drew would tell you he's most concerned about the offensive line. The defense in Arizona has a way of taking care of itself. They lose Todd Bowles, but a lot of talent there. You know, it starts with a really good secondary. I think they're covered there. The offensive line continues to be a big mess. I mean, all they do is invest picks in it, and they you know, continue. And free agency dollars, Mike Iupati is now hurt, the former 49er. You know, I think any Cardinal fan worth their salt is going to be watching to see if Carson Palmer stays upright, if there's anywhere for the running backs to run. For me, you know, that offense is going to score some points. Bruce Arians is a really great play caller. But for me, whether or not Arizona's truly a threat to go deep in the playoffs, absolutely 100% comes down to that offensive line.
On the Raiders side of the ball, our superfan Monty writes in, NFL fans, meet Amari Cooper. This is the only primetime game the Raiders will have until Christmas Eve this year, and I expect this will be the only time a lot of people will get to see future rookie of the year. Well, this will be the only time they can watch a full game of him. I'm sure they're going to see many highlights. He adds that the third wide receiver position battle could be settled this week with Kenbrell Tompkins, Rod Streeter, and Bryce Butler all getting reps. And for me, as a Patriot fan, of course going to bring it back to the Patriots, I'm hoping that Kenbrell Tompkins doesn't work out in Oakland because the Patriots, we've mentioned, have wide receiver depth problems, and I think Tompkins could be an answer for them at that point. But since they already jettisoned him once, I don't foresee a need for them to pick him up again. But, Chris, what are you watching here for the Oakland Raiders?
Well, it's an interesting amalgamation of young talent. I don't think they've really put anything together yet that feels like a coherent identity. You know, there's some really interesting players on offense, and there's some really interesting players on defense. It feels like they've drafted very well these two past drafts. I'm not sure they can do anything in a game in August that's going to rid me of my suspicions that Derek Carr is not an above-average NFL starting quarterback. I just don't believe in him. His tape last year I thought was awful. And that, you know, an offensive line that, again, it has pieces. They've done well with what they've had, but they've lost. You know, their most important tackle now plays in Arizona. And, you know, I just have suspicions that for as much as we're interested in Latavius Murray, there are going to be games where that front just gets absolutely dominated. I guess what I'm saying on that Sunday night game is it's like the battle of offensive lines I'm super suspicious about. And I don't know how interesting that is to watch, but I think we're going to see some defensive fronts look like world beaters in that game.
Ken, this is your last opportunity to ask Chris Harris any question you'd like, especially if it's fantasy football related.
Awesome. All right, Chris Harris, I'm walking into, let's say, a 14-team league. Standard rules, who do I need to draft this year? Who is your darling, whether it's an early-round talent or late-round? Like, for me, if I can manage to do it, I want Adrian Peterson. That's my player who I want the most. Who is yours?
It's funny. I mean, I don't really think of it that way. It always depends on value and who I can get where. I'll take any player if it's the right price. I never, you know, I don't like LeGarrette Blount at all. I've had lots of conversations with Jay about LeGarrette Blount. But if he's sitting there, you know, way after he's supposed to go and, you know, I can grab him at a discount, I'll do that. So I'm not sure I ever focus in on one. I think that's the right way to approach a draft is just never focus in on one player, focus on your board and take your highest guy on your board. But I'll just say players that I have tended to be higher on than other people. Matt Forte comes to mind. I think he's a great player. I admit, though, that there's risk because the situation is looking like it's a little bit dangerous. And, you know, 100 catches is not in play anymore. But Forte almost has to be the focal point of that offense. And since when is a running back being the focal point of an offense been a bad thing? I consider him part of the big six. I call it a big six at the top of drafts. So if I'm at the back end of the first round and Forte's sitting there, I'm always going to take him, whether it's 14-team, 12-team, 10-team. I'm always going to be tempted to take Forte. Other players that I'm higher on than, you know, even though I talked about how bad I think the 49ers are going to be, I think Carlos Hyde is a really talented player, and I have him as a borderline top 30 player. So in that 14-team league, if you're in the fourth round and Hyde still hasn't gone, I would be very tempted to scoop him up. I think he's going lower than that in most fantasy drafts, you know, for a league that deep. So, you know, again, hard for me to say exactly. It always depends on what's there, but there's a couple of ideas.
Very cool. Thank you.
Chris, Yeah, Chris, if people want to hear more of this type of information, where can they go to find that?
Well, follow on Twitter at Harris Football, and then go to www.harrisfootball.com, and you can find a podcast every weekday. It's me, and I have a series of rotating guests of fantasy experts across the globe who come in and look smarter than me and make me feel bad about myself. Hey, that's what it's for, right? That's what you have a platform so people can outshine you. I enable, it's what I do. But I hope people will check out the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. It would help out a lot in this new venture, and I appreciate the chance to talk about it.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate having you on. Hopefully we can check in with you again as the season progresses. And, of course, we've got our side bet on the Vikings and Falcons.
How did I get roped into that one? Oh, wait, I suggested it.
I can't wait for you to lose on that one. We need your suggestions, guys, as to what we should be doing for that side bet. And wearing a monkey suit, I don't think is going to work in this particular case. So send those suggestions to us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast. And you can check out all those previews that we've been talking about in their entirety. We didn't give you all of the nuggets out of the Superfan write-ups. Those are on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. Or if you're on Facebook already, just search Next Fan Up. It'll pop right up in your little search bar. Chris, thank you once again for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I really had fun. It was a blast to talk about this stuff.
Ken, thank you. Sam, thanks. Sam had to jump off already. Mark will be back again on Sunday evening with all of the recaps of this week's games in week 3 of the preseason, the most important week, people. And with that, you know how I like to end it. There you have it.